Naming Monsters on a Stormy Saturday by Devil in the Details. Before you kill the monster, you have to say its name. Terry Pratchett. It was a stormy Saturday in late October. Albus could hear the wind whistle through the Highland Mountains, sway through the branches of the Forbidden Forest, howl across the empty green mouth of the Quidditch pitch, rattle against the glass windows. The gray clouds, broken only by jagged lances of golden lightning, only added to the atmosphere of gloom enveloping Hogwarts. Rain fell in heavy droplets from these clouds, pounding onto the silver surface of the lake, adding to its depths where the mysterious giant squid and the temperamental merfolk lurked, splattering like paint stains against the window panes. The stormy weather made Albus feel maudlin, morose, made him long for company with which to share his old man's musing. More company than his faithful fox or the talking portraits of his predecessors could provide. He left his office, therefore, and sought out that of Minerva McGonagall. When he entered and took a seat in the hard-backed chair she had gestured for him to claim, he found that she was immersed in grading a stack of essays by the light of several flickering candles. She eyed him speculatively over her spectacles as he settled in the chair, even as her quill continued to scratch out some doubtlessly pointed correction into the margins of some pupil's paper.
"I have been thinking about monsters today, Minerva," he declared, pulling a lemon drop from a squished packet in the pocket of his robes, munching on the Muggle delicacy of which he was quite fond, offering her one out of politeness, though he knew she would refuse. She didn't disappoint, rejecting the lemon drop with a sharp shake of her head and a terse, "No, thank you."
"Your loss is my gain."
Albus chewed on the lemon drop she had refused.
"You've been thinking about monsters today,"
she prompted, impatience in her voice. She had never been patient, not even as a student, perhaps the most diligent he had ever taught in his transfiguration class. She had been fiercely intelligent, focused, eager to learn, adept. So much so that she was publishing articles deftly outlining her theories and the results of her experiments, performed under his guidance, in various scholarly transfiguration journals, establishing an impressive academic pedigree before she even graduated Hogwarts.
"Monsters, yes,"
he nodded. Stormy days seemed perfect for thinking about monsters.
"And how to defeat them. Monsters like Voldemort."
She gasped, grimaced so violently that she nearly upset a well of ink over the essays she was grading.
"I wish you wouldn't say his name, especially without warning."
"Your desire not to hear his name is why I must say it, Minerva."
Albus fixed her with his very blue gaze, continuing a debate they had long held on this matter.
"Before you kill the monster, you have to say its name."
"It's folly to say his name when his Death Eaters have put a trace on it."
Minerva's lips were thin, pale lines, lines like ghosts.
"When they can sense what is said and arrive to murder its speaker."
"The wards protecting Hogwarts are strong."
Albus was serene, reminding her of this. It wasn't the monsters outside of the castle that were his greatest fear, after all. It was the monsters he still had to confront and slay within himself. The monsters he still had to name, that hid in the shadowy recesses inside him. Recesses he flinched from acknowledging.
"The Death Eaters cannot operate within these grounds."
"Yes, but that's no reason to tempt fate," she snapped. "Or get sloppy with bad habits that could get a person killed outside these grounds."
Albus sighed, thought that, even though she was so cuttingly clever, she couldn't be his true intellectual equal. He hadn't had a true intellectual equal since that heady summer with Gellert Grindelwald in Godric's Hollow. That summer, he and Gellert had been more than friends. They had been the deepest intimates, sharing every thought, confiding every ambition, building shining, sweeping visions of the future they would create together when they were joint masters of death, when they had captured all of the Deathly Hollows they had researched so painstakingly in the dusty tomes that filled the attic of Gellert's aunt. The celebrated historian Batilda Backshot, who had penned the famous A History of Magic, who had a veritable library of historical volumes with extensive indices for them to reference. The long summer days hadn't been long enough for them then. They had stayed up late at night, writing lengthy missives to each other at moonlight desks, affixing those scrolls to owls to traverse the short distance from one neighboring window to the next. It was in one of those missives that Albus had first developed the philosophy that he hoped would be the guiding principle of their benevolent rule over the magical and non-magical worlds. The simply and eloquently articulated precept of the greater good, which of course could only be understood and implemented by minds as lofty as his and Gellert's. Everyone else would have to defer to their wisdom, accept their judgments. Albus still remembered how the very concept of a greater good had echoed mockingly in his skull after Ariana died, resounding in eerie accompaniment to his brother Aberforth's keening howls. Aberforth, who could never fully absolve him of the blame he deserved for the ending of Ariana's too brief life. The greater good phrase he had first coined in his midnight letters to Gellert continued to haunt him in subsequent years as Gellert rose to power in Europe. As the greater good became the slogan, the marching banner, under which Gellert committed his atrocities, the justification for all his evil deeds. He had wanted to turn away from the bloody sight of his ideas given birth in the real world by the person with whom he had been most intimate, shared most of what he, in his hubris, thought was his genius. He hadn't, out of the memory and love of the intimacy they had once shared in that summer at Godric's Hollow, wanted to be the one to destroy Gellert, to defeat him in battle. But there had been no one else strong enough to do so, and in the end, he had vanquished Gellert, spared a life that would be spent entirely in prison, behind inescapable bars. He didn't know whether that could be regarded as a mercy shown to a monster he had helped to make. Only knew that he hadn't been able to do otherwise. To kill someone who had once been his deepest intimate. Someone who had probed the darkness in his heart more than any other. He didn't know whether Gellert deserved mercy after all the atrocities he had committed. Didn't know whether he did for what he had done to his sister. For the dangerous ideas and ideals with which he had imbued Gellert. All he knew was that when he looked in a mirror, he often saw a monster that he couldn't slay, not even with 1,000 good deeds, because he couldn't trust his judgment of what was good anymore. Not completely. Not after he had so misjudged Gellert and himself. Not after his arrogance and pride had blinded him to the truth of the evil he and Gellert were dabbling in that fateful summer at Godric's Hollow.
"To defeat our monsters, we must first name them,"
Albus repeated his thesis, more for his benefit than for Minerva's. Though he didn't expect her to realize that, she had no way of knowing what was in the dark depths of his mind and his heart. She hadn't even been a twinkle in her parents' eyes the summer he met Gellert, the summer Gellert stayed with his aunt Batilda after getting expelled for performing black magic at Durmstrang. Though Gellert had spun Albus an elaborate tale about the school being too closed-minded to accept Gellert's genius, to understand the vital necessity of the experiments he performed.
"And Voldemort isn't the worst monster we face, Minerva. Our fear of death and loss, our pride, and our cunning capacity for self-deceit, those are all deadlier monsters than Voldemort. Monsters we must name before we can kill them."
"It isn't fear that prevents me from seeing his name."
Minerva shot him a severe look, her spine stiffening.
"It's prudence, common sense. I'm not a coward, Albus."
"I know you aren't."
He smiled at her, telling her the unvarnished truth. He had known her since she was an 11-year-old girl entering Hogwarts for the first time, placing the sorting hat over her young head, being sorted into Gryffindor, House of the Bold Prancing Lion. her black and white morality always too rigid to be swayed by some sophistry about the greater good.
You are a far braver person than I.
I don't think so, she snorted, dismissing the unvarnished truth as mere empty flattery. I could have never defeated Grindelwald as you did.
That was not bravery.
Albus dug out another lemon drop, finding he needed something sour to chew on. There was a strange solace to be found in sourness.
It was only what was necessary to assuage my conscience.